Packers fans, and welcome in to the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. I am Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. We are still at Ford Field. The lights are being turned off. I guess the Ford Field said that their season is over. And it is. It is officially over. They escape with a 37-30 win over the Green Bay Packers. But, guys, a loss technically in the loss column. This game was never going to be about wins or losses, but more about who played, who got snaps, and what the Packers were able to figure out before they head into the playoffs. Is that fair to say, Tom?
Yeah, and who got hurt, who they were able to keep healthy. They got a chance to look at David Bakhtiari and Josh Myers and give them some significant snaps with the number one offense. Both came out, I think, just fine. They only had one injury. MVS hurt his back. So from that standpoint, it was a victory. From the other standpoint, the score and the way they played, it was a loss.
Ryan, as Spoon mentioned, you wanted to see David Bakhtiari get back in there. We saw him get close to 30 snaps today. I know you focused a lot on his game. What did you kind of come away with? How did you come away feeling about David Bakhtiari in his first action in a year?
I thought it was a solid debut. You know, he got the 27 snaps that you mentioned. He was removed two plays into their fourth drive, and one play after he had a second-level seal-down block on a linebacker that he said was a good block and really tested the mobility of his knee, and he felt that after that was a good day's work. And Matt LaFleur said, you know, he was just fatigued. I mean, he hasn't played in more than a year, and that 27 snaps is a significant amount. So they're reserving judgment on what David Bakhtiari might be able to give them until they see how the knee responds. But it was a promising day. It was also a day that David Bakhtiari said he didn't know would come in this 2021 season. He thought initially that he would return week 9 at Kansas City, maybe the next week, week 10 against Seattle, and that was the plan. 3 days after getting back from Kansas City, he was activated from the PUP. He started practicing, but the knee didn't feel right. He said there was a fluid buildup of 80 to 100 cubic centimeters in that knee that made it very uncomfortable. He said that there was more scar tissue than he expected. So that, you know, if you know anything about David Bakhtiari's game, it's built on flexibility. He has rare flexibility for a big guy, which helps him against those really athletic edge rushers that he goes up against on the blind side. He wasn't able to bend that knee with all that scar tissue the way that he wanted to, the way that he needed to. So they needed the second surgery. And after that, he didn't know if a day like this would come. So that it did, that he came out of it well, and that it sure looks like he's going to be able to play in the playoffs is a huge win for this team.
Spoon, we knew we were going to see David Bakhtiari back, or I guess we didn't know we would say David Bakhtiari back today, but had hoped. But one guy that we have yet to see in a few weeks is Jaire Alexander. David Bakhtiari now has 27 snaps back under his belt. Is there any concern that Jaire Alexander has not seen action in a few weeks heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they would have liked to have gotten him out in this game, and if he hadn't have gotten COVID, I think he probably would have played. So now his first action's going to be, you know, covering, who knows, Odell Beckham Jr. maybe, or Cooper Kupp. I don't know who it'll be. Debo Samuel, there are all kinds of options. But, yeah, that would have been nice. They had a bad game defensively. It looked, and I agreed with LaFleur's assessment, that everybody was running around trying to make a play, you know, and I think that's kind of gets to the point of focus for a meaningless game. I think they probably didn't have the energy or the focus. The one thing that's probably good for LaFleur is that he can show them, you know, look, if you don't know your assignments or don't focus on them, this is what's going to happen. Imagine what is going to happen if the Rams are Cowboys do that to you.
Yeah, Ryan, as Spoon mentioned, not a great game defensively, especially in the secondary. They got caught flat-footed a few times. Matt LaFleur definitely used his post-game press conference to send a message to his team and to preach a little bit. At one point, PR even tried to pull him, and he said, no, I'm not done yet. He stayed and waited, and he wanted more questions. He definitely wanted to get something across to his team. Is there anything necessarily to carry out of this game is a huge worry, though, defensively. Run defense was a little better than it has been. Amon-Ra St. Brown, though, of course, did whatever he wanted against the secondary. Again, is there any concern there, or was Matt LaFleur preaching more about effort than anything?
First of all, I've never seen a head coach stop PR and say, no, I want to talk more to the media. That was the most miraculous thing that happened today, and frankly, I wasn't mad about it. So as far as what happened, I have a hard time taking anything of significance that happened from a schematic standpoint, even a competitive standpoint today, because as Spoon alluded to, the effort and energy were not what you would expect it to be in a typical regular season game, certainly not what you'd expect it to be in 2 weeks in a playoff game. There's just – it's apples and oranges. So for me, no, I don't put a lot of stock into that. Matt LaFleur clearly did. He really went hard at his team. You know, one of the things he said after he decided, no, I'm going to still talk to the cameras, is that all 11 have to stay within the confines of the structure of their scheme, and that if you are undisciplined, that stuff like that's going to happen. And he was very adamant when he was saying that. He was clearly emphasizing the point. So from a discipline standpoint, certainly the Packers feel like they defensively need to improve things there. But, look, you got two teams that have two totally opposite seasons and two totally opposite goals coming into the day. You got the Lions and Dan Campbell emptying their entire bag of tricks, reverse passes, fake punt. And you've got a Packers team that significantly scaled back his scheme so that they don't show anybody who they actually need to play for real in 2 weeks anything that's usable on film. When you have that, things like today happen.
Guys, I just got to stop for a second and say RIP. Bob Saget, who died about earlier this afternoon. Gonna have go home and fire up some Full House. Betty White and Bob Saget in 1 week. That is just, oh, man. Well, sounds weird to have to transition off of that, but Spoon, I'm going to transition off of that. There were a ton of trick plays today from the Lions. They threw everything but the kitchen sink at the Packers. We kind of knew that they would. Matt LaFleur said at one point after the game, you know, we can't have those instances where we get caught by seven reverses. He may have been exaggerating, but you know what? There may have been seven reverses on one of those plays. It felt like it a few times. We had double reverses for a wide receiver throwing a 64-yard touchdown pass and a double reverse flea flicker. I mean, they did everything. Is that a blueprint for other teams on how to beat this Packers defense, or is that too much of a risk to try to go into a playoff game and pull off, you know, six different trick plays?
Yeah, that's not going to happen in a playoff game. In a playoff game, you're going to be more disciplined. You saw guys taking chances and hunting. You could see it. You could see on the second trick play, everybody, as soon as they handed it off or, you know, on the end reverse, everybody just went to the ball. Nobody stayed where they're supposed to be. On the end around, that they almost got a first down to clinch it. Preston Smith went inside and went for a sack, you know, to get his incentive. You know, Henry Black came up and tried to get an interception and got in the way of Chandon Sullivan. And there were just all kinds of things like that going on all game long. The one that bothers me is not a trick play, but it was down on the goal line, and St. Brown goes in motion, and everybody switches. You know, the next King takes the outside guy now, and nobody picked up St. Brown. It was like, what are you guys doing? So, yeah, there's some things there that there's some legitimate things that they have to clean up. Now, you'd like to think that probably it was just the result of no focus. They didn't care about this game. And that was LaFleur's challenge, was to get them to care about this game.
Yeah. As LaFleur said at one point, you know, we should have had double coverage on St. Brown, and there was no coverage on St. Brown. And so, I like to call them, I think I mentioned it on our Facebook Live, I call them independent contractors when they're doing that. They're all out there searching for their own payday, their own stuffer. Let's move to the other side of the ball on offense. We saw a half of Aaron Rodgers, which is what I know, Spoon, you were in the camp of not playing him at all. I think Ryan and I both said play him for a half. But I'll be honest, a full half other than the kneel down at the very end is still more than I thought he would actually play. I thought it would be smart to play him a half. I didn't think he would ever actually make it that far. Ryan, were you surprised to see him play that much? And he looked, to, in my opinion, to not have as much rust at the very beginning, which had been a concern in past weeks.
I don't think I was surprised. You look at the way that they treated David Bakhtiari, for example. They didn't have a hard snap count for him. They had a range of playing time that they expected, and David Bakhtiari indicated he was at the high end of that range of 27 snaps. I think that's how Matt LaFleur approached the play time for all key guys as a whole, which is not a definitive number of drives or snaps, but more of a range of what they were and within that range, it was going to be based on a feel. I think that Matt LaFleur wanted to get Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, the starting offense, close to, if not a full first half. And I do think that if their third drive had resulted in points, that might have been it, but it didn't. They stalled out in their third drive. So Matt LaFleur trotted Aaron Rodgers back out for a fourth drive. His day ended on that long touchdown pass to Alan Lazard, and that was a high note to end on. At that point, Aaron Rodgers was 14 of 18, 138 yards, two touchdowns. Really, just my opinion, stamped his fourth MVP season back-to-back. It was, at that point, nothing more to accomplish. They continue the momentum, which is what the primary goal was. Davante Adams got his receiving yards record of finished the season, I think, 1558, surpassing the 1519 of Jordy Nelson in 2014. So they got the high notes accomplished of what they wanted to do, and they were able to finish on something positive.
Before we get to Jordan Love, let's just throw this out there, and I'm going to actually let y'all decide who wants to take this first. You can jump in. Is Alan Lazard becoming the most dependable guy in the red zone?
Not more than Davante Adams. You're saying other than Davante Adams?
No, I'm saying even more than Davante Adams.
Davante Adams has 11 touchdowns. He had a slant touchdown on Jalen Johnson against Chicago, where Jalen Johnson had hard inside coverage. He had, against double stack coverage, an out touchdown within the 5-yard line against Baltimore that you just don't expect to see that kind of route score against that kind of coverage. There is nobody even close to as dependable than Davante Adams in any phase on any area of the field in this receiving game than Davante Adams.
Okay, Spoon. Second to Davante Adams, is Alan Lazard becoming the most dependable guy in the red zone?
Yeah, I guess so. He's been pretty good, pretty reliable. Most of the time they do go to Davante Adams, and you know there's going to be a time when Davante Adams is taken out. And yeah, Lazard has been pretty good. I thought MVS was going to take that Baltimore performance and run with it, and he hasn't. And I mean, he got COVID. That's not his fault. But Lazard is the legitimate number two now. He is the number two wide receiver. So now Cobb will come back, and he's really a red zone threat as well, more of a third down guy, but he's a red zone guy. I think Lazard, you know, he's not a great athlete. He's good. He's solid. He's going to catch the ball, and he can run some routes, so use him accordingly.
I know we've talked a little bit here and there about him also kind of becoming that Robert Tonyan role, that he's that hybrid receiver tight end that can kind of step in and take some of those routes that Robert Tonyan would have taken before he got hurt. Second half was all Jordan Love, for better or for worse. Had a touchdown, two interceptions, 134 yards. He was greatly helped on that. He had 134 yards. He was greatly helped by Josiah DeGara, who took a catch and go for, I believe it was 62 yards for a touchdown. Spoon, do you walk away from this game? And keep in mind that Jordan Love has taken the majority of the first team reps in practice for the past 2 months. Do you walk away from this game concerned, encouraged, indifferent about Jordan Love?
Well, two things I wanted to mention that I didn't get in the last time.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. You talked about Lazard. I thought Patrick Taylor played a really good game. And what struck me the most was how much better they ran the ball in the second half than they did the first. And I think that's because Bakhtiari and Myers are not part of that unit. They haven't been part of that unit. And when they brought Nyman back in and Newman, they really ran the ball well. They pounded it, and Taylor was a big part of that. So it's something to be said for continuity, and that's what they had to get back with Bakhtiari and Myers. Now, as far as Jordan Love, a couple things he did well, nothing spectacular. I thought it was just a screen pass, but he did a really nice job looking off the safeties, dumping the ball in the opposite direction. He kind of set that up. Made a nice throw to Equanimee St. Brown across the middle, although he could have led him a little bit more. I'm just not going to make any proclamations about him because he's still a raw product. And I don't think he's ready to be their starting quarterback next year, but he might have to be.
Ryan, should he still be a raw product at this stage of the game?
Yeah, I mean, he's not playing, so practice is not games. And if you don't play, it's hard to refine some things like an internal clock and picking up intricate details and defensive schemes and that sort of stuff. You know, one of the things we talked about going in was his accuracy, and it was erratic. But erratic is a whole lot better than it was in Kansas City. So low bar, but I do think that Jordan Love showed more accuracy, even if it was in flashes. You know, the third and two ball on the underneath out route to Patrick Taylor, that was a good ball. He let it rip, which Matt LaFleur has talked about he needs to do, and he got the ball to the sideline. Much better than the short 2-3 yard out route to the right side to Juwan Winfrey, where he's behind and low, and Winfrey made a really great catch on it to get the first down. I do think his accuracy was better, but yeah, I'm with Spoon. You need to see a guy consistently in this league piece it together week in and week out and find a rhythm to really be able to take any type of evaluation. So they've got a lot of film now on him, a lot more film than they've had the last year. What they do out of that, who knows? But either way, Jordan Love, they've got to figure out a way to get their Aaron Rodgers back next season. I don't know if it will happen. That's Brian Gutekunst's task, is his job. They've got to get Aaron Rodgers back.
Since we did see more Jordan Love today than we have in a while, let's just focus on one more aspect of his game, and then we'll move on. They rolled him out a lot on boots, naked boots, just kind of getting him out towards the edge. Is that the key to getting Jordan Love moving in this offense?
No, I didn't like that. I thought that cuts the field down. Now, they were trying to get first downs. They're trying to move the ball, and it's part of – you see that scheme all the time where a guy rolls out. Kansas City runs it all the time, and they get first downs with it. But I really wanted to see him in the pocket. And, you know, the thing that's missing from him is some of the off-schedule a little bit. Like, on one of those ones he rolled out, I think it was Winfrey, was – cutting back all the way the other side. And there was a small window where if he'd have saw him out of the left, you know, his left eye, he could have thrown it up there and it would have been a touchdown. But he's not seeing that stuff. That's the kind of stuff Rodgers would see. You know, he'd see that guy was dragging across the back and he could get a touchdown out of it. So I keep waiting for him to do something special. And he hasn't done anything special yet, and he should have done something by now that is special. So that's a downside to him. But I still haven't given up on him. I still think he's got a chance.
That's a great point. You haven't seen anything necessarily that makes you go, yes, I want to see more. And for our sake, I wish he had it, and I hope he still does, because his name just lends itself to so many great puns. And Spoon just snorted at me. Spoon, you mentioned Patrick Taylor earlier, so if you want to stick with that one, that's fine. But I'll come back to you if you have someone else. Ryan, I'm going to ask you, we saw more young guys today. Matt LaFleur mentioned that was a positive of today, getting a bunch of young guys in. Is there anyone that you came away, did you come away having noticed anyone that you maybe weren't really thinking about before the game, or saying, hey, I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit more of them?
Well, I'll tell you, the big thing, we talk about young guys, the big thing in my head right now is, how does the interior offensive line look in 2 weeks? Because I was really surprised to see Royce Newman off the field. He's been the one pillar of consistency in a completely unstable, because of injuries, offensive line all season. And Josh Myers back today. It was Lucas Patrick at right guard. Lucas Patrick's been center for half a season. That really, really surprised me. You know, Matt LaFleur talked about how getting Josh Myers hot this week in practice, ramping him up, they weren't going to not play him. They wanted to play him with the ramp up. And he's a center. It's what they drafted him to play. It's his position. It's his long-term future for this team. So they're going to play him at center. So from that standpoint, I don't know that it necessarily – I'm curious about Spoon's take on this too, but I don't know that it necessarily means that you're absolutely going to see Josh Myers at center. Maybe it's Lucas Patrick. Maybe it's Royce Newman. I don't think that Lucas Patrick was at right guard means that you're not going to necessarily see Royce Newman at right guard. Maybe they've seen all they need from Royce Newman, and they wanted to, for depth reasons, try out Lucas Patrick in a game at right guard. But that was a curveball. I didn't really see that coming.
Spoon, do you think this is the line they head into the playoffs with?
Now, let's say that Billy Turner is able to come back. I wouldn't be surprised if they stuck Billy Turner at right guard and went with Dennis Kelly, Josh Myers, Runyon, and Bakhtiari. I mean, that's a big physical offensive line, you know, and if you have to take on a 49ers team where they're just, you know, they are just super physical, that would be a good offensive line to go in with. Now, if Turner isn't, I understand why they benched Newman. I mean, he's played every single snap up until this game, but he is still kind of the weak link. He gives up too many pressures, and there was one, I believe it was Love was the quarterback, and there was a stunt, and he missed it. And the guy came right up in Jordan Love's face, and it caused an incompletion. I think it might have been on the one that just got overthrown on Equanimeous St. Brown. I can't remember exactly which one, but that's the kind of stuff they can't have, and they got to have better consistency, and they'll know they'll get consistency from Lucas Patrick.
You know, 2 points on your Billy Turner take. One, it seems to me that they've been really, really kind of determined to keep him in one spot this year after all the movement that he had on the offensive line last year. So I wonder if they would move him. I don't know if, you know, Billy Turner has said publicly that he's fine with wherever he plays, but he's also kind of, you know, he doesn't want to be left tackle. And I wonder if they want to keep him one spot for his sake. The other thing, too, it reminds me a lot of, we said the same thing. As soon as you said that, my mind went back to the divisional game last year where we were thinking, hey, maybe they keep Rick Wagner at right tackle and put Billy Turner at right guard against Aaron Donald, and they didn't do that. Dennis Kelly and Rick Wagner have different names, but they're kind of the same guy. So I wonder if they'd really do that when they kind of had a similar situation last year and didn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Part of what they needed was Billy Turner to play left tackle, and Aaron Donald lines up outside too. So they had to have a left tackle there. They could have bumped Elgton Jenkins out, but I think they always talk about getting the five best guys on the line, and I don't know. I think Billy Turner's better than Lucas Patrick and Royce Newman, Dennis Kelly. That's basically what you have to match. Is Dennis Kelly better than Lucas Patrick? Is he better than Billy Turner?
Royce Newman?
I. That'll be an interesting development to watch over the next 2 weeks. Now, I don't know if Turner's coming back in the next 2 weeks. Rogers made a little bit of mention. He's now the doctor on the team, so gives us the medical reports.
He's given the most extensive medical reports we've gotten all season.
I know. I like that. I'm going to start asking him on Wednesdays who's starting this week. Yeah, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, not only that, but it was also Aaron Rodgers that basically got David Bakhtiari onto the field today.
So he says.
So, well, they both say. Aaron Rodgers and David Bakhtiari both. David Bakhtiari said he wasn't, you know, Ford Field's turf. That's not grass. You don't want to return from a torn ACL for the first time in over a year on turf. That is never, ever, ever ideal. And that David Bakhtiari said he really wasn't thinking about playing this week because he's, you know, David Bakhtiari. He's played a lot of big games. And then Aaron Rodgers texted on Wednesday, hey, big giraffe, it'd be great to have you out there and, you know, kind of just get some chemistry, have you on my blind side since you're going to be in the playoffs. And I got David Bakhtiari thinking, okay. So, you know, I thought that was he's not just the GM. He's not just the MVP quarterback. He's also the head trainer. Sorry, Flea.
He's everything and everyone. Alpha.
You know, okay. I haven't seen Dr. McKenzie around in a long time.
Aaron Rodgers has him locked in the closet. Yep. He said, we're running this team my way, Doc. We are doing it my way. You mentioned having to possibly face Aaron Donald, having to possibly face the 49ers, both super physical in the trenches. That was a physical, physical game that I was making Ryan watch as we did our Facebook Live post game out of the corner of our eye. All of that being said, as you go into this bye week for the Packers and everyone else sort of goes through wild card weekend, what is one team that you are going to for sure keep your eye on, sort of thinking like, one, this could be the Packers' opponent in the divisional round, and two, I want to see I don't really know what this team could bring to Lambeau Field. I want to see what they're all about.
All right, so the easy – I don't know where the standings are or the seedings. The easy team to point out would be the Bucs. I think everyone's kind of looking at the Bucs because of last year, because they saw that defensive front, because Tom Brady is the greatest football player of all time. I think that everyone's looking at the Bucs as that team that they – but you know what? Coming into the day, the 49ers, I believe, were playing the Bucs, and that's still the case. If the 49ers happen to win that game, and that's not a great matchup for them because they've got to run the ball to win, and that Bucs defensive front's tough to run on. But if the 49ers do shock the conference and win that wild card game in Tampa, I think that you know, you want to talk about a team that could be like 2011 Giants and just shock everybody and come into Lambeau Field on a divisional round and nobody sees it coming and walk out with the win. That would be an uncomfortable matchup. You all remember 2019. They ran the ball. They ran up 300 yards. They still have that running game. Kyle Shanahan knows Matt LaFleur very, very well. And it just kind of seems like, you know, you look at the conference, the contenders, I don't know who's beating this Packers team. If they don't go to the Super Bowl, it's almost like it's going to be a surprise. That would be the kind of surprise upset that you don't expect coming. So don't discount them if that happens. I think that'd be a very interesting scenario.
I'm actually with you, and I think I even tweeted this during the game. 2019, the most fun I had watching the NFL was watching the 49ers. And the 49ers this past 5 or 6 weeks look like that 2019 49ers team again. They are super, super physical in the trenches. They lean on the run game. They let Jimmy G dink and dunk, and they don't care because that's his game, and they rely on their defensive push. They get home with four because they have some of the best front four in the entire National Football League. Do the Packers have the answer for that on defense and the run defense? Do they have a set starting five on the offensive line to take care of Fred Warner and Nick Bosa and everyone else that they can send? Spoon, are you going to give us a clean sweep and say the 49ers as well is who you're keeping an eye on this wild card weekend?
No, I want to.
Well, you had to be different.
I mean, yeah. My dream matchup is the Cowboys. I want to see him play the Cowboys.
You want to see him play Mike McCarthy?
I want to see Mike McCarthy come back. I want to see two really high-powered offenses go at it. Dallas's defense has got a lot of talent on it. Green Bay's can play well, but that just stands to be a really good game. And so I want to see how the Cowboys do. I wouldn't count them in. I mean, they got to beat the 49ers, and that's a challenge. The 49ers do look like they're pretty good, but I don't want to overrate them either because they got their holes. You know, they're 9-8?
They're now
10-7.
No DeForest Buckner compared to 2 years ago makes a big difference, too.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, no Raheem Mostert. That's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, but they got Deebo Samuel.
Well, yeah, they had him last time. Yeah, and he I know he scored against Jair Alexander this year. I think really pretty much everybody's a good matchup. Yeah. But I want to see the Cowboys, and then – I'm also curious about the Buccaneers. I want to see. They got a lot of guys back this week, so they're starting to come together.
And, you know, I said that the 49ers is who I would like to see and I'm going to watch, but I will agree with you. I want to keep an eye on what the Bucs do this weekend because, to me, the past few weeks, the Bucs have taken a downward trajectory. Were those just one-offs? Were they anomalies? Was it outside noise with Antonio Brown? What are they going to look like this weekend? In their matchup, do they have it all together again with, you know, again, one of the best quarterbacks of all time? Guys, this is your final 60 seconds. Use it wisely. You have a second bye week this season. In a 17-week regular season, what are you doing, Ryan? Ready, go.
I am going to rest and recover, you know. I'm a month removed from COVID at this point, but that cough is still, you can tell the rasp of my voice, it's still there. So, I'm cleared from IR. It's like David Bakhtiari said today, as long as I'm out there, I'm 100%. There's no excuses, no complaints. But let's be real here. It's nice to have a bye week in January. I'm okay with that.
The raspy voice makes me think of that episode of Friends where Phoebe gets sick and she's trying to sing my sticky shoes.
It's incredible how my voice has changed. I sound nothing like I used to. I don't know when it will return, and I'm just rolling with the punches here. So no, hopefully the bye week, kind of like the bye week is good for Aaron Rodgers' broken pinky toe. It's going to be good for my voice.
This is actually not Ryan here. We've been tricking you all this whole time. It's someone different. Spoon, you have an unexpected bye week. How are you going to spend it?
Well, I hate to rain on your guys' parade, but LaFleur said they're practicing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Okay, but you've got Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, well, I'll probably be watching football. So, I'll definitely enjoy the weekend off, but it's a full week of work this week, and, we have to prepare.
You mean we have to work? The nerve. No, I mainly did mean the weekend, and I'll probably be doing the same thing you are. It's going to be cold. I wouldn't even mind it being snowy. It gives me a good excuse to stay inside and do nothing but watch football all weekend. As Tom said, we do still have a full week of practice. It's going to be sort of teams use these bye weeks as a way to sit back, reflect, get back to their own basics, work on their own things. We will be there to cover it for you through it all, so stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage. As the Packers get ready to head into the bye week and come out of it, finding out who their first opponent will be in the postseason. This has been the Green 19 Podcast, brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.